Radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, speaking from Washington, D.C., once again speaking as a voice from the whirlwind, from the middle of the financial maelstrom. Right now, it's 10-10 day. It is 10-10 day, and that is the anniversary of the great Chinese Revolution of Dr. Sun Yat-sen, the founder of the first republic in Asia, destined to succumb to the wiles of Yan Shikai and the Japanese a little bit later on, but then coming back in the 1920s with Chiang Kai-shek and a great revolutionary experience, the 10th of October. Today is, of course, the anniversary of that Chinese revolution. But above all, today is a continuation of the panic of the last several weeks. We are now 1 week into the new era of financier oligarch pseudo-capitalism. And again, it is the reduction of the United States to the plantation of Wall Street. I don't want to hear anybody talking about socialism. This is the opposite of socialism. This is the crushing of working people in the interests of the bankers, and that's got nothing to do with socialism in any definition I've seen. The fact that people want to call this socialism means that their thinking has been so skewed by the monster Milton Friedman and the monsters of the Austrian school like von Hayek that they've lost all sense of proportion. So we are now under the dictatorship of finance capital. And naturally, we pointed out last week or the week before that the $700 billion bailout was a derivatives bailout. It's not really a mortgage bailout at all. It's an attempt to bail out with $700 billion. It's an attempt to shore up $1 quadrillion or 1.5 quadrillion. We really don't know how much. It's now gone into negative leverage and is coming down on all of our heads. And, of course, it's illegal, it's unconstitutional, it's a monstrosity. Above all, it is futile. There is no power on earth, no power in the universe, which can now maintain the bloated, cancerous, speculative, fictitious paper values of the securities on the various pseudo-markets. There are no free markets. Anybody talks to you about a free market, grab your wallet. It's a con artist. There are no free markets. There haven't been free markets, generally speaking, since the end of the old Stone Age. As soon as you get into the new Stone Age, as soon as you get out of the area of hunting and gathering and cavemen, you've got something on the scene called the state. And after that, you don't have barter economics anymore or hunting and gathering. What you have is political economy. And the 19th century knew this. All schools from Ricardo on the extreme right to Marx and everybody in between knew that they were dealing with political economy. That is the heart of the matter, the interaction between the government and the economy. And to want to remove one side of this, of course, this is the Milton Friedman, Chicago School, von Hayek, Austrian School mystification of this entire thing. So we are now in the collapse phase of this worldwide derivatives bubble, $1 quadrillion. Keep your eyes on that. There is a monstrous reactionary legend being spread by Limbaugh and other dyed-in-the-wool reactionaries. Limbaugh has revealed himself today to be a continuing disciple of Ayn Rand, the lunatic Russian theoretician of Nietzschean predatory wolf-like individualism. A terrible, terrible thing to be. And interestingly, that's also the personal philosophy of Alan Bubbles Greenspan at the Federal Reserve, who inflicted the derivatives bubble on humanity. More than any other single person, it's the Greenspan bubble. So, of course, we had the Y2K bubble, the dot-com bubble, the housing bubble, all brought to you by Greenspan. But the greatest, by far, by factors of exponential magnitude, the derivatives bubble. It's gone into negative leverage. That is what's coming down. No power on earth can stop it. You don't want to stand in front of a charging express train coming down at you at 150 miles an hour. It's useless. It's pointless. The $700 billion is enough to bankrupt the U.S. federal government, but it's not enough to stop the derivatives crash even for 5 minutes. And now we're 1 week into the new reign of unbridled, unfettered finance capitalism, the realm of the jackals, the hyenas, the lampreys, the vultures, the bloodsuckers, the leeches, and the ticks of Wall Street. It's Wall Street is your enemy, not the government. Wall Street. Ask yourself, who controls what? Does Wall Street control Washington, or does Washington control Wall Street? Obviously, where public offices are bought and sold, and George Soros runs Mrs. Pelosi, and Obama is a creature of Goldman Sachs, it's clear. Wall Street controls Washington. Wake up, friends. This is the realm of finance capital. Who runs this society? Is it generals, priests, bureaucrats, demagogues, or financiers? What I see is financiers run it, not bureaucrats. There are bureaucrats. They are slaves of the financiers, as are the generals, the demagogues, the bureaucrats, and the priests, all slaves of the power of mammon in finance capitalism. So today we are now in the thick of things. The European markets are down about 20% this week. They have now closed here on Friday afternoon on 10-10 day. And it's likely that, the Wall Street market was down 700 on the Dow in the first couple of minutes, punching through the 8,000 level, heading down towards 7,000, where some people are promising levels of support. Now, remember that in the period 1929 to 1933, there were probably a dozen moments when people thought that an interim bottom had been reached. But, of course, it only proved to be temporary. We've got a death spiral now clearly delineated for Morgan Stanley. This is the House of Morgan. This is getting to the heart of finance capital itself. Morgan Stanley had attempted to save itself by transmogrifying itself out of the bankrupt investment bank that it was into a bank holding company, submitting to various forms of regulation that, of course, are sure to be waived in this anti-regulation and pro-privatization world that Friedman and von Hayek have given us. Anyway, Morgan Stanley is now in a death spiral. Right now, Morgan Stanley is down about 38%. So it's going the way of Lehman Brothers. And we can be sure that other banks will soon follow. Overnight in Asia, we had a large insurance company blow, even as the Nikkei was completing its worst week since 1987 and its worst day since 1987, down about 10% in one day and more than 20% on the week. Italy is down 7% today. The European market's generally down between 7, 8, 9%. The Dow is down 40% plus. I think it's 42 to 43% from the highs that were reached 1 year ago yesterday. In those days, the Dow was above 14,000. Today, it plunged below 8,000. So that's a 6,000-point loss on the Dow. I just urge people, little people should not be in this market. And any way you can get out of it is a good way to get out of it. Obviously, you've got to think about the penalties on 401ks and IRAs. IRAs and 401ks reveal themselves in retrospect to be a suicide pact. Did you tie yourself to the bloated carcass of Wall Street cancer, derivatives, fictitious paper, worthless, toxic securities, the entire baby boom generation, the post-war generation, and the middle class have essentially seen their savings go up in smoke. So be it. It's time for a new deal, and that's what we'll talk about today. Time for the aggressive implementation of New Deal policies as an economic recovery program.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Voice Radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, speaking from Washington, D.C. on this Friday of a week of panic in the international finance oligarch markets. It is time now for people to bid farewell to the world of bloated, speculative, fictitious, cancerous paper valuations. Again, there is nothing that can be done to maintain the stock market at the current still highly inflated levels, and the same thing goes for all of these securities. Most of all, the derivatives. They are the ones that have got to be wiped out. If you wait for the derivatives to wipe themselves out, well, they will wipe themselves out. In particular, today there's an auction going on of certain key derivatives left over from the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers, which up until now was the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history. They're being auctioned off. I suspect that the Treasury is there. In other words, the Office of Financial Stability, with our dear friend, comrade Cash Carey, the hand-picked stooge in there for Paulson and Goldman Sachs. Comrade Cash Carey is from Goldman Sachs himself. And these are people who believe that derivatives have value. They think that these crazy pieces of paper are actually worth something. That is mortgage-backed securities, credit default swaps, structured investment vehicles, collateralized debt obligations. They think that this paper is worth something. And that's the philosophical difference between us and them. We know that derivatives not only have no value, but that they have negative value. They're in the same class with the Rasputnik in the old Al Cap Little Abner series, a currency or commercial paper or a finance paper that is so toxic and so filthy that you've got to pay a garbage man to come and take it away. That is derivatives. 1 quadrillion to 1.5 quadrillion. It's time to wipe them out. You have two choices. Either civilization goes on and human life goes on, or the attempt is made to maintain the value of derivatives. Derivatives are a black hole. They are a gravity collapse. They are an inexhaustible vortex, a bottomless pit. You could throw the entire world, the solar system, nearby planets and stars into the vortex of derivatives. They're still bankrupt. They're even more bankrupt than when they started. They're worse than heroin. They're financial aids. They've got to be destroyed. That is the precondition for any recovery. But, of course, today all policy is bent on the desperate effort to somehow maintain the value of these derivatives, even though it's impossible. Now, this afternoon, the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, as I say, is holding this Lehman derivatives auction. I would not have the Treasury go in there and try to buy these pieces of toxic paper up using $700 billion of taxpayer money. I would simply surround the meeting place with a battalion of heavily armed troops, and I would tell the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, you are out of business under the Trading with the Enemy Act and the Defense Production Act and other relevant legislation. You are shut down. You are an enemy alien, and we're going to vest you. In other words, we're going to confiscate everything you have. Let's do to the International Swaps and Derivatives Association what was done to Prescott Bush by Leo Crowley, the alien property custodian under the Trading with the Enemy Act back in October 1942. Declare them a Nazi foreign alien power and shut them down, because, again, they're more dangerous than any foreign enemy you've ever had. Derivatives are the source of the crisis. And, again, Rush Limbaugh and these lunatic reactionaries, after reading their Ayn Rand stories for the 99th time, are trying to say that it's black poor people, Hispanic poor people, and just poor people, white, Asian, whatever they are, that their wretched little subprime mortgages have now brought down the entire international banking system. Oh, my God. If it had been that easy, then that would have been a revolutionary tactic back when there were still Marxists. You cannot imagine a few billion, a paltry, penny ante, peanuts, chump change mass of not even a mass, but a small wad of subprime mortgages have now bankrupted the banking system in Iceland, brought down one of the biggest insurance companies in Japan. It's too fantastic, boys. We can't believe it. It's off the charts. This is a derivatives crisis. And the people involved are the great communicator, Ronald Reagan, in 1982, he signed a bill that lifted the very stringent ban on any options being sold on agricultural products anywhere in the United States. Wendy Graham, again back in January of 1983, as the head of the 1993, as the head of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, declared that derivatives were legal and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission would provide a safe haven for the toxic madness of derivatives. Most of all, Bubbles Greenspan, avidly reading his Ayn Rand books, decided that government is always bad and the private sector is always good. And when an innovative financial product like derivatives comes along, then it's time to legalize it and go to town. And he fended off all attempts during the 1990s, even to make derivatives reportable. Oh, no, said Greenspan. You can't do that. So the gospel, the devil's litany of deregulation, privatization, union busting, wage gouging, and the race to the bottom, recited by the jackals, hyenas, vultures, and so forth of Wall Street. That's what got you into this crisis. Do not listen to Limbaugh, Hannity, and the rest of these characters that you may be tuned into in the hopes of hearing some attacks on Obama. That part is fine, but and when it gets to economics, you can tune these people out. You can tune McCain out, except that he has taken over Hillary Clinton's proposal for a homeowner's loan corporation, in other words, to buy up bankrupt mortgages. Now, that is an interesting proposal coming from McCain, I guess in desperation, but we'll take it any way we can get it. That puts him to the left of Obama on the question of what should happen to people whose mortgages are going bankrupt. Hillary Clinton had gone into New Deal territory to pick up that idea. McCain has now followed, and he has outflanked Obama to the left on the side of the people on that one little point. So it just shows who's the main puppet of Goldman Sachs, who gets five times more than the other candidate. It's Barky Obama, who, of course, was the key man in getting the bailout passed. Oh, my gosh. McCain vacillated because he was subjected to the gravitational pull of 130 Republicans who, for various reasons, mainly because they represent low-wage employers, didn't want to be taxed for the sake of Wall Street. Perfectly honorable thing to do. McCain was pulled toward them. He vacillated on the bailout. You now see neocons saying, oh, McCain and Palin have populist tendencies. We don't like the way that McCain and Palin are attacking Wall Street. Barky doesn't do that. Barky knows where his bread is buttered. Barky's getting five times more from Goldman Sachs than McCain Palin. So interesting little sidelights. We'll be back with more economic analysis in a minute. Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. We're just watching the death spiral of Wall Street here. You know, it supposedly started in the 1780s or 1790s when some merchants began meeting under a tree to trade securities at certain times of the day. Maybe it's coming to an end. Who knows? Right now, Morgan Stanley is on death watch. It's down 40% in one day. Goldman Sachs, not far behind, down almost 20% at different times today, down 17% right now. And, of course, J.P. Morgan, obviously the one that the government is supporting. Looks to me like the entire plunge protection team has written off Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and Union Bank of Switzerland. They're not going to defend those. They're trying to defend the Fortress Four, including J.P. Morgan, and Citibank, well, at $13 and some change, Citibank doesn't look too good either, although they're a little bit up today that the plunge protection team may be having mercy on Citibank. These institutions are all inherently bankrupt. And you know how you can tell they're bankrupt? Old Bill Seidman, left over from the bailout of the Savings and Loan Association, from the Office of Thrift Supervision and all that. He said that the rule of thumb for a bank regulator is that when a bank has between 10 and 12% of non-performing assets, its survival is a desperate cause. In other words, it's as good as gone. So 10 to 12% of non-performing assets. Now, let's look at the heart of the Fortress Four, which is J.P. Morgan Chase. About a year ago, the controller of the currency published statistics that J.P. Morgan Chase had $93 trillion, trillion with a T, of derivatives. Now, my personal estimate is they probably have three times more than that, something like $300 trillion, $350 trillion. I'm just guessing, but that's my guess. Anyway, officially, a year ago, $93 trillion with a T of derivatives, toxic paper. Now, how many of those derivatives are performing? I would say not too many. And the big question is, hasn't J.P. Morgan, along with Citibank and Bank of America, have they not passed that critical watershed of 10 to 12% of non-performing assets, at which point they should be seized? They should be seized. They should be put through Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And we need legislation telling the bankruptcy judges, when they go through Chapter 11, wipe out the derivatives book. You know the litany. Shred it, delete it, bonfire of the derivatives, Yule log of the derivatives, whatever you want to call it. Wipe them out. No attempt to pay derivatives of any kind, of any kind. Then you will wipe away this kited mass of derivatives, which is what is crushing the credit system and so forth. Just a couple of other aspects of this stuff. Notice that oil is now below 80. Why is this? Because those hedge funds, those piranhas of the financial seas, and they are, by their very essence, deregulated. That's their definition. They fly below the radar. They have so few investors that they consider themselves not subjected to Securities and Exchange Commission rules. Boy, that better change pronto. Regulate them, and then they're no longer hedge funds. Drive them out of existence. We don't need hedge funds. The world is going to do fine with no derivatives and no hedge funds. Right now, oil is below 80. Why? The hedge funds are in liquidation mode. There are lots and lots of big hedge funds that are facing bankruptcy in the short term. So what do they have to do? They've got to sell the derivatives instruments, the futures indices in the Intercontinental Exchange oil market that they had been using to drive up your price at the pump. These piranhas and sharks. My estimate was that at the height of the oil bubble back in July, about 20 to 25% of the gas price you were paying at the pump went right to Goldman Sachs, because Goldman and Morgan, the two that are now on the death watch list, Morgan down 42% now. It may not last the day. Goldman down 18%. These two created that intercontinental exchange to loot you. Even the U.S. regulatory regime was so weak, they thought that was still too much. They wanted to go to Britain, where there's no regulation at all. So what you're seeing is that as the hedge funds are wiped out, the price of oil is coming down because they are in liquidation mode. As they approach bankruptcy, they've got to sell these derivatives contracts to turn them into cash, and that is providing, ironically, some relief. Now, there are a million things going on. Let's just try to get an idea. There's a meeting of the group of seven finance ministers coming up. The Japanese are going to come forward and request an international bailout fund. It is futile. There is no way to maintain the derivatives bubble or any of the other asset bubbles that are associated with it. And most of these banks are going to have to be triaged. In other words, people say 300 U.S. banks are about to blow. The most recent statistic we had was 120 or so on the FDIC death watch list. They won't tell you which ones, but that's a very, very common problem. A lot of these banks are going to blow. I would say, if you think about the Roosevelt period, about one-third of the banks had to be shut down. Today it's about a third also, I would say, but it starts with about the top 25. Just about all of them have to be shut down, starting with J.P. Morgan, Citibank, Bank of America, Wachovia, because that's where the derivatives are concentrated, and about half of it is in J.P. Morgan. Isn't it ironic that the federal government with the plunge protection team is defending the stock price of J.P. Morgan, whereas that's really the one that's most bankrupt compared to all the others. Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs continuing to fall. The other proposal we have is there's going to be a meeting of European heads of government on Sunday. We've had the U.S. Bailout $700 billion. We've had the British government now coming in with £300 to £400 billion to try to shore up the bankrupt banking system of that country. It's even worse off than the U.S., in my estimation. We've had a coordinated international rate cut, a -0.5% rate cut by the Federal Reserve and a group of other international central banks. That's also been a failure. The big demand now is, you can see, distraught financiers coming on CNBC demanding a bank holiday. Well, watch out for that. What they mean by that is, again, the opposite of the New Deal, the opposite of Roosevelt. What they want to do is close the banks for a prolonged period so you can't get your money. This means that money in the bank is a very dubious asset. It is time to diversify out of money in the bank into those tangible physical assets. And indeed, gold is a very good example, which you can have in your physical possession in a safe deposit box or some other receptacle like the CB Posturepedic Bank and Trust Company. So this is all highly relevant. The main proposal now coming forward is that there should be capital infusions by the federal government and the other governments into the bankrupt banks. Now, this stuff is uncanny. We're back to Herbert Hoover. Everything done right up to now is pure Herbert Hoover. Barkey Obama tried to present it as a little bit of the New Deal. Other misguided commentators have tried to present the bailout as something like the New Deal. Believe me, the New Deal is not about payments to bankers. The New Deal is about payments to people, average working people, federal emergency relief, and jobs created through public works, as well as unemployment insurance. Today we would include food stamps, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and other things that are necessary to avoid genocide inside the United States. Anybody proposing to tamper with Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, unemployment benefits, WIC, or other elements of the relatively meager social net is basically talking about sacrificing people's lives to the dictates of some abstract ideology from something, some noxious thing called the Austrian school or the Chicago school. This is impossible. We'll be back in a minute. Once again, Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. on the afternoon of 10-10 Day, the 10th of October, thinking about the great Dr. Sun Yat-sen, one of the top individuals of the 20th century, along with Ataturk, de Gaulle, Franklin D. Roosevelt, and a very few others, nation builders. Those are the guys. And Dr. Sun Yat-sen, the first republic in Asia. What a tremendous achievement, and indeed inspired by Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, right? Of the people, by the people, for the people, translates into the three principles of the people. The of the people meaning a sovereign republic, by the people, representative government, for the people, economic development or people's livelihood. So the great inspiration from Abraham Lincoln to Dr. Sun Yat-sen of China. And that's the kind of thinking we need now. Forget about paper. Forget about paper in any form. Forget about the price of paper in any form. Focus on human survival. You can't eat paper. You can't eat or live or live in or wear a derivative. Forget derivatives. Down they go. Forget stock prices, I'm afraid. You can't do anything about that either. The whole world of paper is finish. What you have to think about is people and production. Human survival, human civilization has got to survive. Now, the proposal coming from any number of finance oligarchs is that there should be an injection of capital by the U.S. government into these bankrupt banks. Well, again, an exercise in futility. J.P. Morgan is a derivatives monster. It's not a bank in any normal sense. They're now using the PPT to support them, even as Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs go down, down, down into the death spiral. The problem there is you can't maintain these bloated values. So you've got to focus on what you can maintain. Let's look at General Motors. Now, this is a whole different kettle of fish. General Motors must be preserved. If General Motors goes bankrupt, it's got to be nationalized. You have got to have machine tools. You have got to have production lines. You have got to have skilled labor. Anything you want to do to get out of a crisis is General Motors. I would say shut down federal lending to Wall Street, concentrate the Fed lending, force them to do it, into General Motors. And this is the proposal I've made. You can see this as a paper that I've written up at actindependent.org. You can see it. It was up in Rents. I think it's still there. If you look carefully, you can find it on Rents. And it was taken up at a few dozen or a few hundred websites across the world in the meantime. Look at it at actindependent.org. They have pretty much a compendium of the stuff I've been writing lately. Up to now, the Fed has issued about $1.5 trillion, the last time I looked, in cheap, subsidized federal lending to parasites. If you're a banker, an investment banker, an insurance racketeer, if you're running a racket in a mutual fund or a money market or anything like that, the Fed has tremendous amounts of cheap, subsidized U.S. government federal credit for you. And what I'm saying is enough already. We need a Main Street lending facility. And part of the demagogic buildup to this bailout, we were told, Main Street and Wall Street have the same interests. This looks like a bailout of Wall Street, but it's really a bailout of Main Street, because otherwise the credit system will seize up. Correct. But in order to avoid the seizure of the credit system, you've got to basically bracket J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, essentially freeze them, basically seize them, put them through Chapter 11 bankruptcy, because they are bankrupt. What you've got to do is concentrate your lending. I propose an initial amount of $1 trillion at an interest rate between 0.5% and 1% for productive purposes only. That means the Detroit automakers, the Silicon Valley chip manufacturers, the pharmaceuticals around Boston and in the D.C. suburbs, Genome Junction, biotechs, people that make medicine, that do scientific research. We've got to maintain wherever we have a functioning assembly line or a functioning park of machine tools with the relevant skilled labor, you've got to defend that at all costs. That's where you put your money. Forget about paper. Forget about the price of paper. Think about people and production. So if you want to help Main Street, help Main Street. Don't think that you can have a trickle down. You put $700 billion into Wall Street and that trickles down into the commercial paper market. Wall Street is a black hole. Wall Street is a bottomless pit. There is no pass-through or trickle-down effect from Wall Street. So people who are upset about the Federal Reserve, I'm with you. But let's not talk this crazy talk about abolish the Federal Reserve. What are we going to do? Go back to wampum? Go back to clamshells? No. We want to go back to a successful industrial economy. We know how to do it. It's been done before. It's called the New Deal. It's called, in this case, cheap federal credit for production. The best example, Lend-Lease. The Lend-Lease program, part of the defense buildup already in 1941, well before Pearl Harbor, the whole year of 1941, unemployment went from 10 or 12% down to practically zero or negative unemployment as a result of Lend-Lease. And it means that you harness credit resources for real, tangible, physical production, hard commodity production. Anybody who wants to produce something, anybody who's in manufacturing, mining, farming, commerce, moving goods, infrastructure building. Many states would come forward and say, we want to rebuild our bridges. Give us a loan. Great. You've got it immediately. This is also done through the local and regional banking system. If you have a dry cleaner, a restaurant, an auto repair shop, any business that does anything real, not financial services, not a brothel, not drug money laundering, none of that. You go take your chances on the market that you, this free market that you always talk about. But if you're willing to do something productive, if you have a socially necessary service or better yet, a productive activity, we want to give you cheap credit. That's the key to a recovery. Not one penny for speculative paper values, but everything concentrated on, in this case, General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler have got to be preserved. Seize them. Right now, Cerberus, a hedge fund, is destroying Chrysler. Nationalize Chrysler right away. Don't wait. Save it. You've got to have those assembly lines. Once you destroy those machine tools, once you scatter those skilled workers, those people with those capabilities, you are in thermodynamic devolution. You're in a collapse into a banana republic and a third world underdeveloped country. You don't want to do it. You must keep a full set economy, meaning you've got to have the entire panoply of productive activities represented here inside the United States. In some cases, we've lost them already to the lunatics of the runaway shop and the third world sweatshop industry. We're going to bring some of those back. But right now, draw the wagons around the Detroit automakers. Now, those guys, they don't have to make cars. They can make urban mass transit. They can make modular housing. They can make a million things. But not if those assembly lines are destroyed. And above all, not if those machine tools are destroyed and the people who run them. So no capital infusion for the banks. I will talk in the second hour. This is all Herbert Hoover stuff. This is all Reconstruction Finance Corporation, 1931 to 1932. Under Herbert Hoover, they tried to give capital infusions to banks. It failed. Every bank in the United States was bankrupt and closed with bank holidays at the various state levels. By the time of Roosevelt's inauguration, every bank in the United States had shut down. So Bush is now doing his imitation of Herbert Hoover. And the series of demands that we're getting, bailouts for paper values, bailouts for derivatives, and capital infusions for these bankrupt banks, this is all straight Herbert Hoover bungling, failure, futile, cannot work. The only time you get to salvation is when you say, forget about paper and the price of paper. There's nothing we can do about that. Too bad. Time to turn away and think about people and production, because that's the future. Otherwise, you're letting the dead hand of these derivatives and derivative debt strangle you. You've got to basically use your disintegrator ray on that and turn around and look at the future. And the future is people and production. So let's say no to the next monstrosity, which is probably $1 trillion of capital infusion into these banks. Okay? So some idea of how to get out of it. Takes New Deal and a recovery program and not Milton Friedman von Hayek. Had enough of that. Back in a minute. Back to the second hour of World Crisis Radio. It's 10-10 day, October 10th. We're recording this program in the afternoon, and right now the Dow has broken through the 8,000 level again for the second time today. It's now down something like 600 points, and we may be headed for a minus 1,000-point day. Again, there's nothing you can do about this. This is a worldwide panic crash. Goodbye to all that. You can't take it with you. Think about people. Think about production. Forget about paper and the price of paper. And in the course of that, let me also remind you of my books. You can't take that money anywhere and get much for it. So you got to get Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. That's available at Amazon.com. And the new one, Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. The full story of the foundation-funded poverty pimp Obama and his Ford Foundation family background. That's also available at Amazon.com. Please buy these at Amazon.com. That's Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, and Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. I'm so alarmed by the threat of Obama, I wrote not one book this year, but two. Now, speaking of Obama, changing gears and getting into the hot phase of the U.S. presidential campaign, we're very happy to be joined again once more by Phil Berg, Philip J. Berg, Esquire of Philadelphia, who is, of course, the crusading and courageous attorney from the city of brotherly love, who has lodged this very important lawsuit in federal court. Obama is not a natural-born citizen of the United States. He is therefore not eligible to be president of the United States. The website, ObamaCrimes.com. Phil, welcome.
My pleasure. How are you doing today?
Thank you for joining us. We missed a week last week because of a convergence of crises of various kinds. But here we are back, and now we're looking forward to getting an update from you on the progress of the suit and also the progress of the propaganda efforts around it.
Well, the suit, we're in a wait-and-see pattern right now. It's just, well, I can't say too much because I don't want to be critical of the court, but this is a crucial case, and we're waiting now for a decision on the motion to dismiss the case. On the last day to file, which was August 24th, there was a joint filing by Obama and the DNC. I think we discussed that before. I'm not sure, but I was appalled.
So far, we have covered on this program the motion to dismiss, but I think there's something even newer, which is the delay of discovery. That we haven't done.
Okay, but the motion to dismiss was really aggravating because, as I stated before, the joint motion was wrong, in my opinion, because the Democratic National Committee and Obama have two different roles. And the two different roles are because the Democratic National Committee must be putting forth a valid candidate. And when they got this suit, they should have questioned Obama and said, what's going on? But they filed a joint thing. Since then, we had 14 days to respond to that. The judge called us, not the judge, his secretary called, and the judge asked for our response in 5 days. So we worked hard. That was the weekend before last, and we filed it on Monday, the 29th of September, in the 5 days that the judge requested. I therefore thought that we would get an opinion sometime last week. We didn't. Early this week, we got a phone call. I got a phone call from the attorney for the DNC and Obama requesting that I withhold, you know, agree to a stay in discovery. And discovery, for your listeners, is, you know, the legal documentation, the legal request for various documents. I had requested a request for admissions and also a request for production documents. I immediately told him no, because I want to get this stuff out of the table while they're trying to still hide things. So they said then they would file a protective order. 10 minutes later, he filed the protective order, and we, in 2 days, responded to that. We feel that they did not set forth the standard to have a protective order, but now it's sitting on the judge's, you know, desk. Also still pending from a long time ago is we filed a motion for expedited discovery, which the DNC and Obama have not responded to. So I don't know what's going on that. So we have at least three motions up there right now waiting for the judge, and time's running short. We're now down to 3.5 weeks. So we're looking into what we can do. We might have to do a writ of mandamus to the Third Circuit, asking them to force the judge in the district court to render a decision. And we're also looking how to go directly to the U.S. Supreme Court. And we're not going to stop on this. We're going to keep going. And that's why I appreciate any listeners who can go to our website, spread our website to other people, and also to send us some money, which we could use because it's starting to cost us. The website, ObamaCrimes.com, as of yesterday, we run a day behind. We've had 27,560,000 plus hits, which is unbelievable, I believe, for a 5 week period of time.
It's exceptional, very much out of the ordinary.
Yeah, 2 days ago, on one day, we had a 1.6 million hit in one day. So I think what it is people are just coming back looking because they're waiting for a decision by the judge. you know, at this point, Judge, rule for me, rule against me, do something. I mean, obviously I'd like it for me, but if you're going to rule against me, give me time enough to proceed with the case. So that's where the case stands at this point. The word has been spreading more and more all across the country. I've been on your radio shows for months now, but other stations are kicking in. And today I did an interview for TV, but they're not going to air it to Monday because of the playoffs going on. But Fox News in Toledo, Ohio, and I don't know if they picked it up because that's where I went to law school, but they plan to run a story on Monday at 4 p.m. and 10 p.m. And hopefully the story will be done well enough that they'll send it out across the country and be picked up by other Fox stations. So, but we can wait and see. Now, there's another thing. I was just filmed 2 days ago. A film crew called me up from North Carolina, and they asked if they could come up here and film me. So I suggested, why don't we do it down at Independence Hall, which is where we went. They filmed me for about an hour and a half. It'll probably turn out to be a half hour to three-quarter of an hour segment of me discussing all aspects of this case. They told me it should be up by later tonight. They want a quick turnaround because we're coming up on the election. They're going to call it, believe it or not, October surprise. So we're taking that from the Republicans, too. But I've gotten an amazing number of phone calls from lawyers recently, people that are in have a closeness to the head of the Republican National Committee, to have closeness to other people in the party, and they believe that this should be taken care of right away. We think it's a sleeper until the end of October, but I think if they play too close, it could backfire on the Republicans. And I'm interested in pursuing it not for the Republicans, not for the Democrats, but really for our Constitution, which must be followed.
Absolutely. Now, let's just backtrack to the legal issue. The protective order says, in effect, Obama does not have to produce his birth certificate or admit that he doesn't have one, right?
Well, the protective order is just that they not have to produce any documents until after the judge rules on the motion to dismiss.
And again, Obama is hemorrhaging in the public relations area to the tune of basically almost 28 million consultations of your website. You know, maybe some individuals more than once, but certainly a very hefty public relations impact, plus all the sites that have taken it and repeated it, and then all the work you've done on radio and whatever we've been able to contribute here. So there's a big brouhaha. There's a big rustling in the underbrush about this entire thing. Is Obama a citizen? Where was he born? I guess it was added to this week when Jerome Corsi was arrested in Kenya, and on that trip he said that he was looking into the relations of Obama and Odinga. I would have thought also that he would have been looking for his for Obama's birth certificate, maybe in Kenya. So, again, Obama could shut this down any time by coming forward with that vault copy of a birth certificate and saying, here it is, now it's over. And he refuses to.
Well, when
Hang
we come back from break,
we'll be
okay.
Right back.
Okay.
Is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Mr. Tarpley in Washington, D.C., and we're talking to Phil Berg in Philadelphia. So, Phil, all Obama needs to do is come forward and say, here's my birth certificate, this is the vault copy, you are confuted, you lose. And he doesn't do it. What can we conclude?
Wait. Actually not. Because they've delayed so long, we've had time to research. Even if he really was born in Hawaii, he lost his citizenship. And let me explain this, and he could not be president. And this might be what really occurred. Let's assume he was born in Hawaii, which we really don't believe. We think he was born in Kenya. But let's assume for a minute he was born in Hawaii. His parents divorced. After his parents divorced, his mother remarried a Lolo Sotoro from Indonesia. In Obama's book, he states, my stepfather, Lolo Sotoro, went back to Indonesia before my mother and I. When we went back, I immediately went to school. Well, Indonesia was at war during that period of time, and the only ones they allowed in school were citizens or natural-born children of Indonesia. So it meant that Lolo Sotoro either adopted him or he could have just acknowledged him as his son. Either way, he became a natural citizen of Indonesia. At that point, and that's verifiable and makes sense now because the school record which we have, which is on our website, ObamaCrimes.com, says your name, Barry Sotoro, nationality, Indonesia, religion, Islam. Then what happened? Then he says at the age of 10, he goes, his mother sends him back to her parents in Hawaii. Now, he did one of two things at that point. He either went through immigration or didn't. And he might not have because let's say he was natural born or he had a certification of live birth, he had some document. If he went through immigration and did all the paperwork, he then would have been a naturalized citizen. And a naturalized citizen cannot run for president. That's like Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California.
Right.
If on the other hand, they did not go through immigration, which is very possible here, then he would today be an illegal alien, not able to hold his seat as a United States Senator from Illinois, be completely illegal on everything he's doing in the presidential campaign. And if that's the case, he should be arrested, tried, and deported. So in a way right now, I could care less if he produces his birth certificate. But if he just produces a birth certificate from Kenya, the ball game's over. But it could even be worse the other way if he then became a citizen of Indonesia. And then, because we know then that he violated the laws of the United States in 1981 when he went to Pakistan on a Indonesia passport. So there's several different reasons why he's not doing anything. What they're trying to do now is just stall. They're trying to stall and hope they get by, hope they get elected. If he gets elected president after November, he's really not elected until
the Electoral College, meets in the various states, usually
right,
in the first week of December.
We could
and
challenge
then
that.
Still not until those votes are counted in the House of Representatives at the beginning of the of January.
Right.
It's only in the first week of January that you actually know who the president is legally.
Right. We could challenge that through that time, but again, if he pushes and gets delays, it could be. And let's go the worst scenario that he's sworn in. If he's sworn in, we're stuck with a person who's not eligible to be president. The only way to get him out would be to impeach him. You'd have a Democratic Congress. You couldn't impeach him because they wouldn't do it. And then what would happen, it would be a constitutional crisis, which I'm trying to avoid, because
right.
I've been in touch with people over in Europe, and I'm sure you have, and they know that he's not qualified to be president, doesn't meet the qualifications to be president, and therefore we'd have a real constitutional crisis, certain world leaders wouldn't want to deal with him, et cetera, et cetera. And we don't need a constitutional crisis about the president with all the turmoil that's going on right now with the financial crisis.
Absolutely correct, and thank you for adding that second dimension. So there's basically two counts where if he was not born in the United States, he's out, and if he can't show that he somehow went through this procedure, I don't know, it looks like he lost his citizenship no matter what he did.
Right, and if he went through the procedure coming back through immigration, he would not be eligible to be president because he would be a naturalized citizen. So
okay.
So, and that's why he's hiding documents, because, as I stated, he has nothing to hide. And I'm not sure if I mentioned, if I did cut me off, I did a taping down at Independence Hall 2 days ago for about an hour and a half, and they're going to air that. Oh, I did mention that.
Yes, right.
We're going to call it the October Surprise. It should be up by tonight all over the Internet.
Well, I'm sure people can go to your website, which is ObamaCrimes.com. make a contribution there, because if we have to go to the third Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, that is the appellate level there in Philadelphia, and then all the way to the Supreme Court, that's going to cost some money. Just Amtrak is already a lot of money to come down and do it. The other thing, though, McCain had been running a relatively weak campaign in the ad hominem department. In other words, the part about who is Obama, he's now pulled himself together to talk about Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn under the prodding of all sorts of people. So McCain has somewhat begun to raise these questions about Obama, but it seems to me now the next step gets him into areas precisely like this. In other words, he's got to mention something. Otherwise, McCain is letting us down. He's not doing his duty to the country. He says country first. Well, country first means you may find ad hominem attacks disdainful or distasteful, but that's what you have to do, because it's not just ad hominem. It's the Constitution, after all.
Absolutely. And really, this issue has to be dealt with at the time. I can't stress how important it is, because we really are headed towards a constitutional crisis. So what your listeners can do is call any newspaper they know, any other radio show or TV shows, and try to get this more spread out than it is. Go to our website, ObamaCrimes.com. Take it and copy it. Send it to your family, your friends, your neighbors. And really, let's get the message out. Get the pressure up on there. And, you know, together, hopefully we can unite and do something. But it's really absurd what's going on. And like I said, Obama owes an explanation to everyone in this country. But more important, he owes an explanation to the over 18 million people that voted for him and the people that donated over $425 million to him. So these things have to be taken into consideration. And I think it's just outrageous. I think it's the delay tactics enforced by them that they're trying to do wrong. And I'm just hoping the judge comes through. I can't believe, you know, if he doesn't do something by Monday, we're going to rethink our approach, which way to go at this point.
Okay, let me thank Phil Berg. Phil, we need you on again next week and every week until the election and even beyond. I'm sure there may be some chance to pursue this even beyond. Thanks to Phil Berg in Philadelphia. We'll be seeing you next week. And in the meantime, you got to go to ObamaCrimes.com and make a contribution to support this work. Thank you, Phil.
Very good. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
To World Crisis Radio. Again, we're taping on the afternoon of 10-10 day, the 10th of October. The crash is on. Wild gyrations in the stock market. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley obviously on the death watch list. And the PPT, the Plunge Protection Team, able to keep J.P. Morgan up 3-4% most of the afternoon. Let's see if they can hold the line. Morgan is down almost 40%. Goldman down almost 20%. Citibank has now turned negative, down 2%. Union Bank of Switzerland, watch out for them, heavy on derivatives, down more than 7%. So also, we've got capitalism in some of these places where finance capital had not penetrated. Looks like that's going to be a brief interlude. Today, trading has been halted at various times in Russia, Ukraine, I think in Belarus also. Who knows? It looks to me like the era of the finance oligarchs in Russia is definitively over. They've been kicked out of political power by Putin, and now the dead weight of their own lunatic system has pulled them down. I think you'll see Russia revert to something that looks significantly less like the Anglo-Saxon model, and the same thing for Ukraine. And Austria has also suspended Iceland has suspended, Romania has suspended, Milan, Italy has suspended in at least some categories, different parts of the day. So the crash goes on. Now, before we leave the domestic sphere, I got to remind people of my books, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. That, of course, available at Amazon.com. That's the entire story on Zbigniew Brzezinski, the gray eminence, the secret trilateral Bilderberg Rand Corporation Chicago School hand, skull and bones, behind the Obama candidacy, revealed Obama as an agent of finance capital, which he now is shown to be, the darling of Goldman Sachs and the main enforcer of austerity and the bailout. And then the new one, Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography, also available at Amazon.com. That is the question that's been in the news this week. Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, the friends of Obama. Extensive analysis on them. What are they? They are foundation-funded terrorists. They are a deployment of the intelligence community in the larger sense. Remember, under Reagan's executive order 12333 in the early 80s, they codified and legalized what had already been going on for quite a while. The domestic counterintelligence, counterinsurgency apparatus was taken out of the FBI, out of the CIA and similar agencies, and put into the foundations, the Ford Foundation above all, but also the entire foundation community that swims together with the Ford, the Rockefeller, the Carnegie, and the other foundations, the Annenberg, the MacArthur, the people whose names you see on public broadcasting system, the ones who bring you people like Charlie Rose and Bill Moyers and support the programming there on national public radio. Those foundations have been doing social engineering. And the goal of it, of course, is to maintain the dominance of finance capital over this society, which means to maintain fragmentation, to destroy mass movements, to prevent the emergence of a broad united front against finance capital and against Wall Street. And that's what Ayers and Bernadine did. They are wreckers, destroyers of mass movements. Any mass movement they ever touched, they destroyed. SDS was the biggest left-wing membership organization in the history of the United States, and they destroyed it. The peace movement and the student movement were destroyed by these terrorist provocations of the weatherman lunatic clique. These people are fascists as individuals, clearly, and it looks like they were getting foundation grants at the very beginning. Bernadine, in particular, Bernadine Dorn, goes back to the office of Edward Levy at the University of Chicago Law School. Oh, my God, a Rockefeller-funded institution back in the mid-1960s. This is Edward Levy, who became the Attorney General under Gerald Ford. That's the matrix for Bernadine Dorn. She's then in the National Lawyers Guild, which is, it's called a Communist Front Organization, but it's really here for an FBI front organization, and Bill Ayers. So they were sent in to destroy SDS, and indeed, within a year after their seizing power with the National Office clique in Chicago back in 1968 to 69, they had thoroughly destroyed SDS. So that is what they represent. Now, the question for Obama, Barkey, who is your best friend? I submit his best friend, Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorn. That's the couple they're closest to. The real issue is, does Obama have the mentality and the worldview of a weatherman? And I believe he does. He's steeped in Fanon, steeped in Nietzsche, steeped in the racist ravings of Jeremiah Wright and Flager, which is the other side of the weatherman coin. The weatherman program for the United States is race war. That the main issue is not economic development, not reform of the political system or infrastructure, not housing, not health care, not urban mass transit, not jobs, none of that white skin privilege. In other words, the white devil theory of history, and the only hope for the United States, according to Ayers, Dorn, Mark Rudd, and the rest of them, Howie Mastiger, who is now part of the Progressives for Obama, the entire weatherman clique,
said that what is needed in the United States is a bloody race war which will exterminate large parts of the white population and lead to some kind of a catharsis and a payback for colonialism, racism, and so forth. That's straight weatherman doctrine. That's what they preached then, and you can see that is what Ayers still believes. You read between the lines in his scholarly writing, so-called, and you can see that that is still where he's coming from. Does Barky Obama share this view? As far as I can see, yes, he does. Do you want to put a weatherman in the White House? A crypto weatherman? Somebody who may be a weatherman sympathizer, a weatherman co-thinker, a weatherman fellow traveler? That's Obama. So that's what you're being offered. Now, it's good that McCain finally pulled himself together and got some guts and came out and talked about this. It means that it's open season on the weatherman connection. The Annenberg-Chicago challenge, however, the people who have been writing about this don't understand what foundations do. This applies to Stanley Kurtz, the neocon, writing in the National Review and the Wall Street Journal, Steve Diamond, professor of law. They've done yeoman service in exposing the Chicago-Annenberg challenge. But what was it? Was the goal of the Chicago-Annenberg challenge to improve education? No. That was never an idea. Was it then to indoctrinate people in lunatic ultra-left doctrines? Yes, partially. But the main goal is what nobody else seems to see. It is the divide and conquer aspect. You can get a group of black parents in the inner city desperate because their children are not receiving education. You organize them into local school councils, a community control apparatus in the Chicago school system. You turn those desperate parents into a political commodity. That is to say, a battering ram. A battering ram against who? Well, who are the enemies of finance capital? Generally, it's the teachers' union. This is what they did in New York City in 1968. It worked very well then because the parents were black, the teachers were white, Jewish in many cases. In Chicago, it didn't work so well because so many of the teachers were black. They couldn't quite get the race war going in the way that they wanted. This is the project of Bill Ayers. So the Annenberg-Chicago challenge is a typical divide-and-conquer exercise. That is what an Obama presidency would look like, bringing the country towards race war and civil war. It is better to turn away from this right now. We'll be back in a minute. Crisis Radio. This is your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C. So, Obama, the postmodern coup, the making of a Manchurian candidate, get it at Amazon.com, and get also Barack H. Obama, the unauthorized biography. Help me by buying these things on Amazon. You push up the Amazon rankings. I'm showing, I think, 22 and 26 on the Obama list. And you put in Obama, and you get, if you just flip through 20 titles, you get down to Obama the Postmodern Coup at 22 or 24, and Barack H. Obama the Unauthorized Biography at about 26 or 27. And the higher those go, the more people see them. So nothing succeeds like success on Amazon.com. Let me also say that in Germany, the Kopfverlag has put out, that's K-O-P-P, they have put out a German-language version, slightly abridged, but the main things are there, of Obama the Postmodern Coup. It's called Obama, wie ein US-Präsident gemacht wird. Gemacht meaning produced, fabricated. How a U.S. president is fabricated, I guess you could say, in English. That was doing very well yesterday. It was at 770-some-odd in the rankings. Obviously, the lower you go, the better it is. You want to be one, but it's certainly better to be 770 than it is to be 2 million. So the Kopfverlag, thanks to them, the German readers can look at this book,
also with the warnings about Zbigniew Brzezinski and the desire of this clique to play Europe against Russia and destroy both in the process so the Anglo-Americans can exercise imperial control over the globe for another 100 years. So please do look at those books, Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, Amazon, and Barack H. Obama, The Unauthorized Biography. There's a third book that you probably might be interested in these days of crisis. It never got to a paper publisher. We hope to do something about that in the coming weeks and months. But Surviving the Cataclysm, Your Guide to the Greatest Financial Crisis of World History. You can get that from my website, tarpley.net. www.tarpley.net. You'll see a way to order it. Be advised, however, this is not on paper. This is a disc. It comes as a electronic manuscript on a 3.5-inch disc, IBM compatible only. That's all I have. If you want to get it sent to you by email, then send an email address in the letter you send me to that post office box address in Washington Grove, Maryland. It costs you $12.95 inside the United States. That's very, very low price. Hasn't gone up in 10 years. It basically gives you the conceptual tools to deal with the crisis. In particular, I recommend on days like these, read the chapter on derivatives madness and, of course, the economic program to get out of a depression, as well as advice on what you can do to protect yourself, which is still quite valid and still important for people. So that you get at tarpley.net, Surviving the Cataclysm. Again, it's not on paper. Don't ask for the paper version. So far, there is none. It's only electronic. That may change, but that's going to take a while. So if you want to get this right away, go to tarpley.net. Now, that just leaves us a few minutes. The Reconstruction Finance Corporation. That's what's coming forward now. We are basically recapitulating in a way which is absolutely astounding, eerie in many ways. The developments under Herbert Hoover between 1929 and 1933, March, Herbert Hoover created this thing called, he did this in 1931, Reconstruction Finance Corporation. And for those days, it had a lot of money in it. You got to remember the entire U.S. federal budget for 1931-32, it's about $3 billion. It's really unbelievably small compared to the post-World War II levels. $3 billion as a federal budget. And of course, those were real dollars, but still, what did they put into the Reconstruction Finance Corporation was about $2.5 billion. So it means that they put in almost the equivalent of the entire year's federal budget. That would today be, you know, a trillion or a trillion and a half. So we're basically in the same kind of ballpark with the $700 billion plus the various Fed injections and so forth, the big loans that have been made to AIG. They're up to about $125 billion just for them, $35 billion for Bear Stearns and so forth. So you'd have to say the effort under George Herbert Hoover, Walker Bush is approximately equal to that under Herbert Hoover. And both are a failure. Why? Because they're being wasted in the futile attempt to prop up bloated, speculative paper values in a panic. It's what you can't do. The icy breath of panic is everywhere. These values are coming down. There's nothing that can be done about it. Derivatives are crashing down. The only question is, do they drag us into Hades, or do we cut the links and let the derivatives go to hell, in effect, and survive ourselves up here on God's green earth? That's the question. Choose between derivatives and human survival. You want civilization? Destroy derivatives. You want to avoid genocide? Destroy derivatives. Wipe out derivatives at all costs. Not one penny, not one nickel for subsidizing derivatives. It just won't work. It's expensive and it's futile. It will not work. You can argue that even to a banker. It won't work. These also, the values in the stock market, it's unfortunate, again, for the 401ks and the IRAs, these are hopeless. It's better to get out of this stuff now. all these advisors that come on television and tell you time to buy and hold and ride out the tiger. Some people are already saying it's too late to sell. Until yesterday they were saying don't sell. There's no reason to sell, and now we're being told it's too late to sell. What happened to the window? There was about 3 seconds in the middle of the night one night when it was time to sell, and they didn't tell you, so now it's too late. Well, obviously, it's better to get out of such markets if there's any way that you can do so, and indeed, into cash, into things like gold, and above all, paying down debt, owning use values, controlling the things you need, a home, a car, the tools of your trade, extremely important. Invest in education. That's always a good investment. But in terms of what's going to happen to people's retirements, we're going to have to beef up Social Security. We're going to have to basically say the level of the Social Security pension is unrealistically low. We're going to have to increase it, probably double it, I would say. For most people, Social Security would be doubled to the point where you could actually live on it. And again, live on it with your necessities covered, your health care, extra expenses covered, and a little bit left over for some amenities. No luxuries, but some amenities and all of your necessities covered. So we're going to have to beef up the social safety net, not what the Austrian school says, not tear it down. Do we want the nanny state? Yes, we want the nanny state. All those arguments are out the window. As soon as Wall Street got $700 billion, they got the nanny state. By God, I'm getting the nanny state too. I want the nanny state in spades. I want nanny state cubed, quadrupled. We want the nanny state because otherwise people will die. We're going to need federal emergency relief. We're going to have to go back to Harry Hopkins and the federal emergency relief, the CWA, the PWA, the WPA, get people working in productive jobs or infrastructure, which is the precondition for production, and give them a living wage. Another urgent one, LIHEAP. We've got to get that low-income heating assistance program fully funded for the winter. If you have money, you want to put it into, in the government, I mean, put it into unemployment benefits, extend that to 52 weeks. Make sure the food stamps are funded. Make sure WIC, women, infants, children. We can't have a generation of children stunted with pellagra and rickets and scurvy and cognitive defects because they didn't have the right nutrition. Got to put money into that. Forget Goldman Sachs. Put it into WIC. Put it into food stamps. Put it into the Head Start program. Make sure every kid gets a breakfast to start the day so they can learn and not be subjected to cognitive impairment because of malnutrition, because the home is too poor to provide a meal, not even a breakfast. So the three steps, wipe out derivatives, nationalize the Fed, and then do things like stop foreclosures and provide relief for the people who are going to be hit by the Depression. That's a recovery program. That's the New Deal. That's what we want. Goodbye, Milton Friedman. Goodbye, von Hayek. We're going back to the New Deal, and we'll see you next week on World Crisis Radio.